as if they don't have too much on their plates. The Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
We want a SmackDown.
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 John Pollock and Neil Flanagan with you to review a swift, quick episode of Friday Night SmackDown. Blink and you missed it on the USA Network on Friday night. Netflix for us international viewers. Lots to go
over. Breezed by.
Oh, it did. It always breezes by. Yeah. When you look down and at the clock, and I was just thinking, oh, wicked. It's only 9:30. We're only halfway through this show. We will be getting to everything SmackDown related. If you are listening on the YouTube channel, have you liked this video yet? Have you given us the subscribe? What's wrong with you if you haven't? If you want to get more of Neil and I, you can go over to postwrestlingcafe.com for the XL edition of the show, where Neil and I went through all the latest WWE cuts, which continue to grow. The latest name added to the list, Big Body Javi. Javier Bernal has been, he has confirmed himself that he is a free agent in 30 days, and also getting out his booking information. Has not been on NXT proper for quite some time. So the list has continued to grow. But just quickly, he joins a list of Braun Strowman, Katana Chance, Caden Carter, Shayna Baszler, Dakota Kai, Gigi Dolin, Eddie Thorpe, Cora Jade, Jakara Jackson, Riley Osborne, Gallus, and Oro Mensa. So Neil and I spent some time chatting about that, as well as all of the some front office cuts from WWE. Crown Jewel Perth, the first crown jewel in a democratic nation, as Neil pointed out. AEW's residency in Philadelphia coming up at the end of August, and some Impact notes from Thursday night in Irvine, California. Tonight we are focusing on SmackDown from Des Moines, Iowa, at the Wells Fargo Arena. 7,164 tickets distributed, according to WrestleTix. And this is part of a back-to-back set of shows from TKO, because Saturday night, the UFC Fight Night card will be taking place from this arena with Corey Sandhagen taking on Davison Figueiredo. And we did see Michael Bisping and Brendan Fitzgerald, the broadcast team, showing on camera tonight.
Brendan got no love, but...
No, not at all. He just kind of sat there as Michael Bisping got all the shine. Do you think Michael Bisping lasted until the end of the show?
I think he might have lasted to the finish of that tag match. I'm not sure.
Guy's got like a 7-hour broadcast tomorrow. Yeah. I think he would be like, you know what? I don't need 3 full hours of pro wrestling.
Do you think it sold an extra ticket, a single extra ticket for Fight Night?
I think that Fight Night card looked a lot more enticing than this SmackDown did after 3 hours. If I was going to one show this weekend, I would be going to the Fight Night over this. Yeah. That would be my call. Damian Priest arrives. I'm sorry, Neil. This feels like this was a week ago that this happened. Mm-hmm. This one, I really, really felt the length of this one. And I know some people are just throwing their phones at their wall that hate my complaints about the length, but I'm sorry. This show is too goddamn long.
It is. You get no argument from me. I mean, it's just, everything is subjective, but I was going to say it's subjectively too long. But these incredibly long entrances, you know, all the rest of it. We've said it till we're blue in the face. Hopefully the countdown is on to,
Damian Priest arrives. He gets into it with the Bloodline backstage and tells Jacob Fatu, "I'm coming for your title." LA Knight just saunters past them and walks right out to the ring, and explains how his match with Drew didn't go his way, but blames Solo Sikoa. And he goes to address Damian Priest, who he could have just addressed backstage, but he walked right by him. So Damian comes out, and they decide to air out their grievances face-to-face with the premise or preface that we have no issue with one another. But then they prove that they have very many problems. Mm-hmm. And Priest explains that his issues are with the Bloodline. Knight says, "Well, you picked the wrong time, and I lost by DQ because of you." And Priest points out, "You know, Solo had hit you with the spike. I just saved you being pinned with a Claymore." Knight brings up the fact that you were you were beaten by a Claymore at WrestleMania. So don't make my failures, don't make your failures mine. And they get into a heated argument over whose fault the DQ was. And Priest ends up stating that Knight has his head up his ass and we don't have to wait for our match later. We can have the match right now. And LA Knight was probably thinking, well, wait, LA Knight, probably assuming that Nick Aldis has this show booked to a T and every segment is absolutely full. We can't just be mixing and matching segments here. But wouldn't you know it, a referee runs out and we get the impromptu match here to kick off the event.
Yeah, a decent enough promo battle, you know, with some logic in there, but not exactly setting the world on fire in the sort of upper mid card of SmackDown, I would say, you know, and it sort of also highlighted who was missing this week, you know, even, we didn't have John Cena. We didn't have even Drew, you know, here to interrupt. But it did set the stage, I thought, for a fairly hot crowd. You know, they were a compliant and obedient one. We're back to that, which is interesting, I think, post-Mania. I couldn't imagine this crowd booing Cody, for example. They seemed back on script. I think it was wise for them to take Cody off TV. Now he's probably on a scheduled vacation, you know, anyway, after WrestleMania. But in that little run up to Mania with Cody getting some boos and Cena getting some cheers, I thought that was kind of interesting. And in an absence makes the heart grow fonder sort of way. No harm to have him off TV for a little while.
No, I don't think so. And I think based on just what they've announced for next week, I mean, there's no need for him on now. Like, I think he's just going to miss this whole pay-per-view cycle. Oh, yeah. And I guess we'll see if after Backlash they start to build up for a return or something. And maybe make a big deal out of his return, like make it as opposed to something just random to come back. So Damian Priest and LA Knight, we had Priest grabbing him by the throat and can't hit the South of Heaven. Then the Razor's Edge gets avoided and Knight manages a DDT, leaps for the elbow off the top for a two count. And then Priest ends up coming out of the corner to hit the Razor's Edge and Knight kicks out. The straps come down and the South of Heaven gets countered. Instead, Priest hits a broken arrow and Priest climbs to the top. Knight to his feet, leaps to the top, hits a superplex. And then after sliding through the ropes to the floor, he is hit with a flatliner onto the edge of the apron, and then Solo Sikoa just attacks Damian Priest for the DQ. So a bit of a groan-inducing finish. But I will say, I thought these two had a fine match together. I think the crowd helped it a lot. They got into they relied on a lot of their big moves and doing a lot of near falls throughout. But I would say for LA Knight matches, I thought that this was, you know, a better outing for him than is typical for, you know, an LA Knight TV match.
Yeah, I agree. And he certainly had the crowd. I mean, we had this is awesome chance and everything, you know, and some of his moves is basic, you know, is somewhat basic as they are compared to, you know, high flyers and over in AEW or whatever, probably an unfair comparisons you would want to make. Get big reactions, you know, the jumping net breaker always gets a big reaction. It's not a crazy move or anything, but he's got the crowd in his palm for sure. But it was somewhat groan inducing, if not entirely unpredictable, that it would end the way it did.
We knew where they were going and it was just a matter of how they were going to get there tonight, as they don't really have much more time to, get to this four-way, but that would come later. Sikoa is into the ring and starts attacking Knight, but the Samoan Spike gets stopped by Damian Priest, and he goes for the blunt force trauma to Sikoa, and then Priest and Knight are left face-to-face, and Priest goes to clear the desk, and he's going to hit Sikoa with the South of Heaven, but it gets stopped when Jacob Fatu appears, dives onto Priest, and it's Knight who gets hit with a Samoan drop onto the unbreakable desk, and then Jacob Fatu with a running hip attack to Damian Priest against the barricade. And the angle of which they shot this, it was like the cameraman took the brunt of this hip attack into the barricade.
A slight production blip. First of all, we saw a much better view of a producer with her head sort of set on than the hip attack into the barricade. I think off camera, yeah, we basically didn't see the hip attack at all. We saw a producer instead, just after the Simone drop on the desk. And then, you'll get to this probably, John, but, Barrett says our card is ruined. You know, this was going to be the main event. And here we are, we're starting the show with it, which took me to the WWE.com site, which had precisely two things listed for tonight.
Oh, it's just
Miz versus Aleister Black and Randy Orton will be live. That was all that we had going into this, you know, to the general public's eyes.
Dedicate your Friday night with us for 3 hours, and this is a taste of what you'll get. It's great when your company is just rolling and you can get away with a lot of things, but I mean, what an ask of people. Like, that was, they did not announce LA Knight and Damian Priest until around like 6 o'clock tonight. Mm-hmm. Cause all day long, it was just those two things that Neil mentioned. That was your hook for tonight. Saxton speaks with Fraxium, who are excited to be here in the best tag division, pretty deadly walk in and say, we are the two tastiest snacks around here, and they appreciate having some more European blood, but they want to see if this Fraxium team is any good. It's like, obviously a team that doesn't watch the product, and they got a match with them tonight. So Fraxium and Pretty Deadly. We have the tag to Frazier, who just goes at a ridiculous speed here, and he goes for, he does this inverted and a regular DDT combo to Wilson and Prince. And there is Prince laying on the ground for a standing shooting star press. And Frazier comes down, and I think it was his elbow that just catches Prince right in the chin. And you see him go for the pin, and Daphne LaShawn is counting, and it's 1, 2, and Du Prince is not kicking out. No. So she's just got to do like the phantom, overhand to just sweep the mat. And Prince is not kicking out. He's busted open. And the crowd, they're just like thrown off because they see it was like, this is a three count. And you see like Prince is like pretty busted up here. And he goes just into the corner to catch his bearings. Frazier doesn't seem to have any idea what is going on because he just wants to continue. Wilson, who I think is just improvising here, tags himself in to take over. Yeah. But Frazier is still going after Prince. So Wilson's got to like grab him and like, hey, I'm the legal guy. And they just go right to the finish here with the Spanish Fly Phoenix Splash combo and Wilson taking the pin. You could see Prince getting tended to on the floor, and he eventually like looked to be standing. I'm sure he was just like, might need some stitches. I don't know if this was anything more serious than that, but he definitely got it. It seemed like he probably got his bell rung because he just did not even have the presence to kick out from this.
It really looked like it. I rewound this several times. The angle wasn't perfect to see the point of impact, but yeah. I mean, there was no attempt at a kick out at three. And there was a time this would have ended the match, wasn't there? Like, I mean, the refs, if there was no attempt to kick out, would have counted to three. So interesting that didn't happen. But quite a bit of blood coming from his bottom chin. He did reflexively move his hand up there, but you couldn't really see much else happening. It was good to see him on his feet, though.
I just thought this thing kind of just, like, they got to the ending of it. It's not like this was like awful, but it just felt as though this match kind of just fell apart with this, and they kind of had to wrap it up. So not a great appearance here for Fraxium. B-Fab and Meechin are with Nick Aldis. They're angling for a title match when Liv Morgan returns from filming her movie. Like, that could be a long time. I mean, this women's division, I mean, is it not telling that, yeah, we're going to let the champion go film this movie, and we're okay icing these belts unless they just strip them. The Secret Herbis walk in, and Chelsea is in a black veil mourning the loss of her United States title.
I enjoyed this.
Later on the broadcast, Wade Barrett would state that she says, sometimes our nation mourns, and had compared herself to Jackie Kennedy. And
my take was Melania at the Pope's funeral the other week. At first, you know, until later on, they made the Jackie Kennedy reference, but it got a laugh out of me, I must say, this in full mourning.
The The dialogue here was pretty funny where Nick is just looking at this as so ridiculous that she is this upset over a title loss. And Chelsea explains, "You're not from here." Like, neither are you. And
or Chelsea, you. Or you. He pointed at all three.
And then Chelsea threatened to take Nick Aldis to the Supreme Court, which is a threat that would probably scare everyone in TKO. And she wants a recount. And Aldis assumes she wants a rematch. But first, Piper Niven has a match with Zelina Vega tonight, which is a non-title match. And maybe she will get the next title match. We had highlights of John Cena and Randy Orton from TLC 2013. Is this one you throw on every now and then when you're just sitting back and relaxing?
No, I have very vague memories of this.
The classic ladder match to unify the titles.
Oh, see, it reminded me when TLC was a pay-per-view, you know, and it was kind of like at the ass end of the year, you know, kind of when they do the holiday tour now. It used to be, I think, the December.
This was pre-network. Pay-per-view. This was one of their last pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a way to go out.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Nia Jax came out for a promo. She is back to take the women's title, and she's interrupted by Tiffany Stratton, who says she is not the same Stratton that was bullied around by Nia. Cashing in was the best thing I ever did. She calls Charlotte the greatest of all time, and I beat her, and I beat you too. She'll defend this title any place, anywhere, but then out comes Naomi. Well, looky, looky. Mm-hmm. And she explains that Stratton always helped Nia retain that belt last year, making my life hell. Naomi has changed. I'm a new Naomi, and I took out Jade, and I'm not done going after gold. And not only will I push you onto a car, I can also push you under one. She's coming for keeps. And then Jade storms out, fight breaks out with all four, and wouldn't you know it, Nick Aldis comes out. He needs a main event, snaps his fingers, and we've got a main event, Neil. Can't wait.
Who would have thought it? You know, that,
two hours from now, you have 2 hours to get ready for this.
Yeah. Nick's very fortunate with these things falling into his lap every week.
It's amazing. It's just, he always knows. He knows something will fall in my lap, and I'm an astute GM. I'll know when those opportunities are, in my lap to capitalize on. And here he got a main event for himself.
I did enjoy Naomi here, though.
Naomi was very
psycho
good.
Mode. Yeah, it's
very
great.
Good in this segment. They recapped Aleister Black's return last week, and Carmelo Hayes is telling The Miz that, Carmelo Hayes tells The Miz he's sick of all these people playing him. And his new, his Andre medallion, his chain, is now just simply known as Dre. Yeah. This is the best thing Carmelo's done on the main roster. He's gotten this chain over.
Certainly since the first round draft thing, which, you know, just you thought, oh God, putting a rocket on this guy, then it was nothing until now. So now I'm all about Dre. Yeah, this is good.
So Miz says that he has outlasted all the flavors of the month, and this guy only lasted 5 years in this company. And then he went into the abyss with Rusev. And Joe Tessitore says that the Andre Dre weighs 15 pounds. I don't believe him. I don't think this is 15 pounds that is around his neck. So it is The Miz against Aleister Black, and Miz charges at him and immediately scoots to his ass, avoiding the Black Mass. So Black lets the leg down, and we get at certain points the attempt to have a kickboxing match between these two, with a trained kickboxer and The Miz trying his best to impersonate one. Black gets distracted by Hayes and is driven out of the ring and into the LED board as we go to the commercial break. There's a leg sweep, kip up combo into a quebrada for a two count by Black. And then Miz does the Miz kicks, and Black is like biting his tongue watching these things. Mm-hmm. And he gets up, hits a spinning elbow, drills him with a kick. And then Miz again snaps the throat on the rope. Skull crushing finale is avoided with a cartwheel counter, and Miz runs into the Black Mass. Black lifts him up by the throat, and then as Hayes distracts, there's a roll-up by Miz, and then runs into another Black Mass. I will say this about The Miz. He sells this Black Mass really, really well. And it is Aleister Black getting the win, and Black and Hayes have a stare-down afterwards, along with Dre. So we had could have a handicap match coming our way with Dre and Carmelo.
I was going to say the same thing about The Miz. You know, The Miz is what he is in ring, but he's a really good gatekeeper, very good seller. He's great at putting other people over. And this match was better.
He's one of the
most
unselfish people in these situations. He knows exactly what this segment is supposed to be. It's not about me getting any kind of shine in any little way or wink, wink. And it's just full on getting this guy over. And in that ways, I think he's like a great value in the role that he is in, that the guy always will stay over at his level. And, conversely for Aleister Black, like obviously this probably continues with Carmelo Hayes. What do you think about this in terms of just a direction for Aleister Black's first program? Is this sort of like pigeonholing him at a certain level? Or do you think that this is just, it's an introductory quick reintroduction for Black?
It feels somewhat mid-card, you know, and that is what it is so far. But on commentary, they were putting him over very heavily. I don't know how many times they mentioned Muay Thai, several dozen, it felt like, by the end of the match. But, I mean, they were really putting over his striking ability. I think that the proof will be in the pudding in terms of who does he graduate to after this. If it's Carmelo and he makes short work of him, then that's okay, you know, for television for the next few weeks on SmackDown. But it's where he goes from there.
Santos Escobar is in the back and tells Rey Fénix he embarrassed Lucha Libre by losing to a clown like El Grande Americano. You were chosen by Rey. You blew it. And Santos hopes that Rey is gone for good, and the person to take his place is Santos Escobar. Fénix cuts him off and tells him to stay out of my business. There's only one luchador that I trust, and it's not you. And he issues a challenge to Santos for tonight. Only one luchador that he trusts.
Yeah, so not his brother? Or is it his brother? Or is it Rey Mysterio? I mean, Mysterio is the obvious
Hoovy
answer. Hoovy, yeah. Juventud, yeah, for sure.
Vampiro, no. Zelina Vega versus Piper Niven was next. Non-title match. They didn't show clips of this. It wasn't actually a WWE video, but Vega went to the 9/11 memorial this week and put the belt on her father's nameplate there. I wish they had aired this. Again, it was done with Josiah Williams, who used to be, you know, work with WWE. But yeah, it's something WWE, they brought it up here. Yeah. It would have been cool to show. I think, like, it's you know, it's a thing that everyone knows about Zelina Vega here. And I mean, they had like a pretty entertaining, like, David Goliath match here with Zelina and Piper Niven. And I think Vega, like, they could really have something with her as kind of like this underdog champion that can fight from underneath, with the right opponents. And Piper Niven, I thought, was a very good opponent for her. She took like 80% of this match just beating down Vega consistently. And then finally Vega manages a Meteora, but then is, hit by a black hole slam. She's trying for the code red, but just because of the size, cannot hit it on Niven. So she manages a tornado DDT, hits a moonsault off the top, but can't pin her. Vega then counters a powerbomb, and it's Chelsea on the apron, preventing a 619. Niven runs at Vega, missing and taking out Green, and that allows Vega to pin her with a bridging jackknife cover. And, you know, as in this babyface role, I think that they could do something with Zelina Vega, but a lot of this focus was on Chelsea Green, who was just just nuts here on the floor throughout. I mean, they cut to her and it just took all the attention away because she was very entertaining here in this, you know, mourning the loss of her belt.
Yeah, I'll get to Zelina, but I think you mentioned some time ago, John, that they really missed a trick, I think, particularly on the European tour with Chelsea and the Secret Harvest, where they could have done some tremendous vignettes with them out and about, you know, in some of these European cities with this gimmick. But yeah, I'm with you on Zelina, and I've felt that way really for quite a while. Backlash in Puerto Rico a couple of years ago, I mean, she had a really good outing at that show, and of course she had the home crowd, you know, with her, but that underdog role is good, and she played the role of a Rey Mysterio, sort of the smaller competitor in this match rather well. And I think this may have been my match of the show, you know, in terms of in-ring, and it was, yeah, very good.
I enjoyed this. Like, it wasn't anything they didn't announce this ahead of time. It was just kind of thrown together on the show, but I thought this worked, and it was like, I felt a lot more, into this idea with Zelina Vega than I did last week when she won the belt, where it kind of just felt like a, you know, just a quick win to, you know, give her a chance with the belt. But, you know, we'll see as they continue with this, if they can make for a, you know, a belt that is not taken super seriously, but one that, you know, you have someone that the audience does get behind in Zelina. Nick Aldis is very upset with Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa getting involved over and over. Sikoa blames Damian Priest for last week. So Nick Aldis states it's going to be a triple threat at Backlash with Jacob Fatu, Damian Priest, and LA Knight. But then Sikoa points out, well, it was Drew who won the match last week. He should get the title shot. Aldis says, you know what? You're right. No triple threat at Backlash. It's now a fatal four-way, and Jacob is just kind of eyeing Solo. But then Fatu says, that's fine. Line them up. I'm going to dog walk their ass. And off walks Jacob Fatu, and Sikoa tells Aldis, you're trying to screw Jacob over. And Aldis says, no, you are.
You are. How's your Jacob Fatu impression coming along, John?
That one's going to take some work, especially when I'm coming off a cold. I'm not quite ready to go into Jacob Fatu in person.
I will say your voice has improved leaps and bounds from last. It was last Sunday, I think. It was you and Cena doing the TNA pay-per-view. It was pretty much at its lowest point. Reaching for the tissues throughout.
That show was an extreme struggle.
Raw with Damien the next night, still, you know, but it's interesting because obviously you're doing pretty much everything at the moment. Just that slight improvement every show. You sound good tonight, though.
I'm trying. I'm rehabbing. I'm back to good 85% at this point. But yeah, Rebellion was not my finest hour, I will fully admit.
Oh, it was a very good show. Very good review. Show I'm talking about.
Well, that was the end of, that was the end of 2 hours. Now it's time for hour three. Kicking things off is Randy Orton with a soliloquy. He knew the real John Cena from day one. Arrogant, selfish. It just took you fans 20 years to see it. I'm sorry. I know Randy Orton. He's a much more likable fellow these days, but listening to this promo from the guy that to a man was the nightmare of all nightmares to deal with. I'm sorry, but this is one reason why I think people just cannot fully sink their teeth into John Cena, that they know if we are going to put professional and personal resumes together of Randy Orton and John Cena over the last 25 years, I think John Cena will be goddamn saintly in comparison to Randall Keith Orton. But he says that Cena was always an entitled brat, and Cena was the ultimate shiny new toy to be played by the ultimate puppet master, which I guess you could take as a veiled reference to Vince McMahon or a veiled reference to The Rock for the purposes of this storyline.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know who he was referring to, but those are the two possibilities for me.
He explained that Cena took advantage of the PG era, willing and eager to be a walking, talking cartoon character, while Randy Orton was always true to who he was.
Yeah, someone who'd shit in other people's kit bags.
He says that Cena never cared about the boys in the back, only about his bottom line. And that Cena, he runs off all the variations of his merchandise that he peddles to all these kids, and says that you're not raising any of these kids. You're just raising the prices on their merchandise, forcing their parents to have to work a double shift to afford all of it. Man, Randy Orton talking to the everyday consumer.
Yeah.
This economy, it's tough for everybody, even the Cena merchandise consumers. He says, Cena is not going to erase his family's history. You're just the latest legend I have to put down, and I will do it in front of my friends and family and the future generation of Ortons. And then he's going to kick John's shoulder off his shoulders through the archway in St. Louis. This was just a bizarre promo coming from Randy Orton about John Cena. And,
The whole "you never cared about the guys in the back" during the time when Randy was known to be the public enemy number one among the boys in the back is just hilarious to anyone who knows their history of this point. Yeah, and our second threat of murder tonight, because we had Naomi's going to throw someone under a car and he's going to decapitate Cena by. They're obsessed with heads being removed from people, completely removed from people's shoulders. But yeah, I mean, it's a spirited promo without his opponent there. But yeah, I mean, and in a match that we don't buy him winning, it's a tough spot. But you're right, John. I think that, you know, the premise of this that Cena has all he knew from day one. Cena was, you know, just a grifter where he was Mr. Good Guy, you know, with the boys.
I think there's segments that John has had in this heel character that have worked, that have clicked. But I think like there is a certain level that I don't think there is one fan that looks at John Cena and has that, even like that hint of realism that allows you to kind of get into this heel persona, that they have just seen this guy for so long and no one buys this guy as this horrible prick that is just has been letting it just bubbling underneath his veins for all these years. Backstage we go. Naya and Naomi are getting ready and Naya tells Naomi to stay out of her way. And Naomi says, sure. Main event. I can't wait. I'm counting down. R-Truth comes up to Randy Orton and says, you have no chance at Backlash against my childhood hero who's going to beat you. Orton's like, why are you saying this? Jimmy comes in, who's like now like R-Truth's like handler. And Jimmy just tells Orton, you know, I've got you. And he warns R-Truth, and Truth repeats, John Cena's the last real world champion. Cena would never lie to me. All I know is this is ending with a bloody destruction of R-Truth. And
yeah, it has to. And that's one thing that will get the heel persona over.
It will. When they decide to do this. And R-Truth is like the one guy that is buying this version of John Cena. I do think this will at least have a nice payoff to it.
I think so too, yeah. Because for the last couple of weeks, it's been to Jimmy and to Truth, you know, get your asses to Des Moines or wherever they were last week, and they're getting 90 seconds of TV time. But yeah, that's where this is headed, and I'm looking forward to it in a way, because like I say, it's one thing that will really sell the heel Cena to the crowd, and it desperately needs it.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Rey Fénix against Santos Escobar. This was pretty much a commercial for Wade Barrett to talk about AAA for most of it. Fénix leaps through the ropes into a Rana on the floor, and then Santos shoves him into the apron. Tope Suicida, they go to break. Santos is in control for the whole thing until Fénix returns with a moonsault off the top, spinning wheel kick after the Tiger Feint through the ropes. And after a flying knee is hit by Escobar, there's a kip up by Fénix, hits the head kick, double down from both, and then Fénix comes off the shoulders, drop kicks him in the back of the head, goodbye amigo kick, and then hits a Meteora to win, not using the muscle buster, whatever they've given it a new name in WWE.
Oh, I can't remember someone
escaping
in the chat
me at this time. But anyway, he won with the Meteora, and it was a fine match. I am watching these matches, and you are seeing like Rey Fénix adapting to WWE, and it's a much more conservative Rey Fénix. But he still has like the big moments that crowds like respond to, like the rope walk and the dives and such that he works in there. But you are watching, like, to me, like a Fénix that is kind of turning the volume down a bit to, yeah, you know, just adapt to like a different type of style here in WWE.
First, the man himself, John Kleinchester, reminds us the Mexican muscle buster is what they're calling it.
Yeah.
I didn't like this match at all. For two very talented luchadors, it started off incredibly slowly with those open hands to the chest. There was a wee bit of a botch by Fénix quite early on as well, when he was doing that sort of flip with the ropes. The crowd felt checked out at this point. They were feeling the third hour as well. There was just, I think, too much downtime in this match. Disappointing because, you know, on paper, this should have been pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it was late in the show. I mean, there was, maybe this crowd, they were really excited. This main event, it's next.
Yeah.
Then Byron Saxton is with Stratton and Jade Cargill, literally the exact same promo that Naomi and Nia did. It's like, stay out of my way, you stay out of my way. It's like, okay, we have two teams that they can't get along. Then I was glad that they at least put a video package together on the TLC match, but by the end of the show, I was like, we could not have carved out a segment for like the Street Profits on this show somewhere. Like this show needed some stars on it. And I think just having the Street Profits come out and it's like selling the effects of this classic that they had last week. I think more could have been done with this because it was such a well-received match last week.
Even a pre-record something. Yeah. More than what we got here, which was just a couple of clips and, you know, some reception from mainstream outlets. It's kind of,
Santos is yelling at Los Garza. So Andrade walks in and asks, what's your problem? And says that Santos doesn't have any respect nor honor. And Santos is not going to hear this. So he grabs Angel, takes him away. Berto is left and he's unsure as he's looking at Andrade, but ultimately leaves with Santos Escobar. Compelling. Yeah.
I feel the sarcasm. Yeah. I mean, Berto's a good wrestler. So's Andrade. You know, when they get together and then take on the other two, it'll be a match, won't it, John?
It will, in fact, be a match. So next week, John Cena returns the night before Backlash. Nia Jax takes on Jade Cargill in a number one contenders match. And then Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa taking on Damian Priest and LA Knight. That takes us to our heated main event with Tiffany Stratton and Naomi against Nia Jax and Naomi. They attack Jade and just beat her down for a long period of time. This was her selling the whole time to set up the hot tag to Tiffany. It's finally made when they come back and Tiffany is in. She attacks Nia, hits the handspring elbow, and then turns a Samoan drop into a crucifix. Stratton gets stopped on the turnbuckle, and this time Nia hits the Samoan drop and a leg drop when Naomi tags herself in, so Nia's not happy about this. Goes for the split-legged moonsault, Tiffany gets the knees up, and she tags Jade, who grabs Naomi by the throat, licks her, and then hits a choke slam. The announcers didn't even call attention to this licking by Jade Cargill. Kind of odd. Jax drags Naomi away from her, tags herself in, and attacks Jade with a senton, goes for the pin, Stratton breaks it up with the swanton, and Jax proceeds to avalanche splash everybody. And then as she is going for the annihilator, Jade pops up, power bombs her out of the corner, and it is Jade Cargill pinning Nia Jax 1 week before their number one contenders match. So I'm thinking that Nia gets her win back next week. And then Stratton and Jade are left together looking at the belt when Naomi returns, attacking Jade and knocking down Stratton. And it's Naomi holding up the belt. So there's the one idea that you could just go to Tiffany and Nia, but they could also be setting up for another four-way on this show, the way this has been positioned, which might not even be Backlash. They might just be saving this title match for TV. They did not say that this number one contenders match is setting up Backlash.
No mention of that. And I mean, they have talked about what is going to be on Backlash because they did a wee bit of a hard sell segment on tickets. It's clearly not sold out as yet. So, yeah, but I was glad to see, you know, I am a fan of this Naomi character, and so I quite like the fact that she's in this picture at least, and, you know, to see her sort of close out the show and standing tall, I don't mind, because my fear, as I've said a few times, is that she's just, you know, going to get whipped all the time by Jade, and that isn't happening, so it's good from that point of view.
The Backlash card now has four matches with John Cena and Randy Orton for the WWE title, Lyra Valkyria and Becky Lynch for the Women's Intercontinental title, Pat McAfee against Gunther, and Jacob Fatu, LA Knight, Damian Priest, and Drew McIntyre for the United States title. So maybe one, maybe two matches that they add on to this show, probably for sure at least one, but yeah. That's kind of the nearly full card. So we will see what else is added there, but it is kind of feeling like you're not going to be getting everything involving like Seth and Punk and Reigns and Breaker. Does not feel like they're going to be throwing that onto Backlash unless they set up something on Raw Monday.
Yeah, I think Raw on Monday is a possibility, but we're so close to the show at this point. You know, it's a week tomorrow that I feel like they would have set that up by now. I also think we're only going to get one more match. That's just my impression, that they really on the B-level pay-per-views have settled on this five match card format. Seems to be working pretty well. I'm sure you and Way are happy with that as well, because it's a lot more digestible.
We are going to be getting to your calls momentarily, so if you want to jump into the room, now is the time to enter. But before we shift on over to feedback and calls, final thoughts on SmackDown tonight. I thought this was a bit of a 3-hour slog. I don't want to be too negative on the show. There's a lot of the creative is just not inspiring me at this moment. There's some stuff that is working. But a lot of it is reserved on Raw. And you watch this show, it just felt like a very depleted SmackDown as well. Like not even having like the follow up really beyond that video package for the tag, which was just such a strong point of last week's show. But I mean, balance things out for me. A little glass half full is needed, Neil, I guess.
I mean, it's hard really to do the glass half full trick here because I agree. And for people who don't like us agreeing, you know, these are my genuine opinions, but it does feel too drawn out. That is, you know, when I'm sitting through the entirety of, and this was not in the international break, it was on television, the pretty deadly entrance, you know, with the whole way down with the slow-mo bits and the mirror ball and all. I'm beginning to sort of sigh and yawn at this point. This show cannot go back to 2 hours fast enough for my liking. And it did suffer again, I think, this week from a lack of star power and follow-up on what was an absolutely tremendous TLC match last week. I will say, let's see, what can I come up with? Chelsea Green consistently entertaining, and those segments, even the backstage segment where she's in mourning, genuinely, like maybe it's my sense of humor, but it got me, you know, I thought that was funny. her antics ringside were funny too. The elevation of Zelina, all of that I kind of enjoyed, but that's maybe 15 minutes out of a 3-hour show riddled with ad breaks. It's hard to be too positive.
Yeah, like I enjoyed Zelina Vega on this show as well. Knight and Priest was, you know, fine match up until the finish, but it has a purpose, like to get to that 4-way. And I think that 4-way will be very strong at the pay-per-view. It's just, listen, I'm sorry. I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but this is a really tough ask, I think, of your fan base for like 3 hours on this. This show is just, it does not feel like it has the capacity for 3 hours. I don't think I would have the same feeling if this was Raw that was in a 3-hour format instead of 2.5 every Monday night, where it just feels as though they do have a lot more engaging stories, engaging characters. And this one, like, you really do feel that extra hour in this format. Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Those were our thoughts on Friday Night SmackDown. We're going to say goodbye to everyone on the YouTube channel. Again, you can go XL at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you 30 days access. And showing up on Thursday was the Poison Rana crew for this week's edition of Rewind Away. Nearly 3 hours, as I talk about length of show. A very long WrestleMania 32 from 2016 that Braden, Davey, and I went through in exhaustive detail.
A very breezy 3 hours by comparison, I must say, John. I watched it on YouTube this afternoon and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, if you want your head to spin, the creative attached to this show going in and coming out of it will this will put any modern booking into perspective. So it's quite the show that we have. And Davey attended this show back in 2016. Mm-hmm. So we do have that live perspective from Davey. So that is up there on the feed for everybody on the Post Wrestling Cafe. And again, this coming weekend, we have got a Collision Course on Saturday night with Kate from Montreal and John Cena. And Sunday, Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson with their review of both nights, the highlights of New Japan's Wrestling Dontaku card. So we will say goodbye.
Can I just add, John, that on the day after that, on Monday, Daddy Cool himself, Mr. Wei Ting, will be back for the XL edition of Raw, I believe.
Yes, this is bigger than Cody Rhodes returning to SmackDown. It is Wei Ting back on Monday night on Rewind a Raw. We will chat to the new father of two himself, and we will see what Wei Ting has been up to during this several week period where we have not checked in with him since night two of WrestleMania. So that is all for us on the free channel, but sit back. We are now heading on over to forum.postwrestling.com.